You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickard is out today. Let's set the scene. A suspect in a high-profile crime goes to trial. The case was all over the headlines. It had tragic, shocking consequences. Everybody has seen this story and seen the alleged perpetrator's face in newspapers, websites, on TV. So how do you find jurors who don't already have their minds made up, who aren't biased because of what they've seen in the news? That story is playing out now twice. The trial of the alleged Boston Marathon bomber has been going through the jury selection process this month, interviewing over 1,300 potential jurors. That's on hold till Thursday due to the blizzard. And a court sent out 9,000 initial summons for jurors in the Aurora, Colorado theater shootings. Dean Strang is here in the studio to help us sort things out. He's shareholder in Strang Bradley LLC. That's a Wisconsin-based criminal defense law firm. He's also the author of Worse Than the Devil, Anarchists, Clarence Darrow, and Justice in a Time of Terror. Dean, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, let's get to the average criminal case first. Without this kind of high-profile media presence, how complicated is jury selection usually?
Well, Let's start by understanding that the average criminal case in state court anywhere in this country is probably these days between 1 and 3 or 4 days long. Mm-hmm. So jury selection in an average case might be expected to take half a day or a day if you have an indulgent judge. And for most cases, all or most of the jury panel will be blissfully unaware of any of the allegations in the case. So it really, in the average case, is a process simply of deciding who physically can serve, who's going to be so distracted because mom's in the hospital or the kids have the flu or whatever, or who's got some really strong predisposition one way or the other in the case, because usually of a relative in law enforcement or a bad experience with the police themselves or whatever. It's not terribly complicated in the average or in the mine-run criminal case.
And do we usually worry about a potential juror being familiar with the facts in the case based on media reports? If I've followed the reporting on this, even though it wasn't a high profiling, is that in an ordinary case? I'll throw quotes around ordinary there. I'm sure they're all a little different. Is that something that an attorney on either side might worry about?
Yes. And it certainly gives the judge and both of the lawyers something to talk about with jurors, something to probe. But that in itself is usually not terribly hard. First of all, we need a lot of exposures to a story before even the basic details of it begin to sink in or stay with us. And second, most Americans, today are willing to acknowledge, at least superficially, that much of what they read in the media often turns out to be wrong eventually or unreliable in some way. So it's certainly something to explore with potential jurors if they've had any exposure to the allegations or underlying facts in the media. But it doesn't necessarily rule them out.
So let's take it to the opposite extreme of these two cases that triggered this discussion, the Boston Marathon bombing, the Aurora shooting. People have had repeated exposure in the media. Virtually everyone has heard of these things, probably saw repeated stories, especially soon after the incident. Is there some kind of view that we can get a juror who is less familiar, who hasn't been bombarded with that in a case like this?
Well, I don't know that you're looking for, realistically, that you're looking for jurors with no familiarity in either the Aurora, Colorado case or the Boston federal trial. What you're hoping, and you may be kidding yourself, but at least what you're hoping to get is jurors who are willing to sift out the information they've heard before and come into the courtroom carrying, and at least to go through the mental exercise of trying to decide the case based on what they hear in the courtroom. Now, again, that may be a deceit on the part of the justice system mm-hmm. and the people who participate in it. But at least that's the idea, not that you come in, pure and devoid of any mm-hmm. knowledge about anything, but rather that you can put in context and set aside what you've heard and try to focus on what you're going to hear in the courtroom.
Now, let's look at the how here. And I understand rules vary from state to state and then into federal courts as well. But who decides whether a jury needs to, or a potential juror needs to be removed from the pool? How do they do that?
The judge ultimately makes that mm-hmm. decision. There are two types of strikes, essentially, at work in this country, in either state or federal court. One is a strike for cause, that is removing a juror because there's some good cause why the juror can't or shouldn't sit. That could be a bad back. That could be vacation plans that have been made earlier. That could also be a bias or a predisposition about the case that the juror really can't set aside. There are also then peremptory strikes, the strikes typically for which a lawyer need not give any reason at all, and there's a limited number of those. But in the first instance, we're really talking about removing jurors for cause. The lawyers on either side can suggest to the judge that there's cause to remove a juror. The lawyers may agree on that or not, but the judge makes the decision in the end.
Now, you've been a defense attorney. Is it an art or a science of deciding which juror may be bad for your side and trying to get them either make that peremptory challenge or get them challenged for cause?
People have tried to make it a science. Mm-hmm. People have thought of it as an art. I don't think it's either or ever will be either quite. It's a craft in a sense, no pejorative connotation intended there. And I think the craft of sort of deciding who you don't want on your jury really has a lot to do with listening closely to the jurors, watching for nonverbal communication, and coming in as a lawyer with a pretty good feeling for where the community probably is, where at least where the center of gravity, if you will, in the community probably is mm-hmm. on your case, whether you're prosecuting or defending.
Now, some complicating factors in these big cases, Boston Marathon and the Aurora shootings, the death penalty is a potential outcome here. Is that something that's going to weigh on who gets selected or ousted as a juror?
Hugely, both practically and legally. In any case in which the prosecution is seeking death as the punishment, the prosecution has a right to exclude from the jury anyone whose opposition to the death penalty is so strong that they would never impose it under any circumstance. In other words, that a juror who just simply can't follow the law in terms of the aggravating and mitigating circumstances that she's to consider in deciding the penalty if in fact guilt is first proven beyond a reasonable doubt, if that juror simply can't consider imposing the death penalty, if that's what the evidence warranted, the prosecution is entitled to have that juror or potential juror excluded. It's a more limited right of the defense to have excluded any juror who automatically would impose the death penalty if, for example, murder is proven beyond a reasonable doubt, if guilt is proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So in theory, as a legal matter, you need to have jurors who, whatever their opinion about the death penalty, are at least willing to consider imposing it if the facts warrant it, or imposing a sentence less than death, typically life without parole, if the mitigating circumstances warrant that.
Now, some controversy in the Boston area. Apparently, some potential jurors being rejected because they're Catholic teaching opposed to the death penalty. Uproar among the famously large Catholic population in the Boston area, the people from which this jury pool is being selected. I mean, is that a broader brush, I guess, than we usually paint with when we're selecting jurors?
That would be an unlawfully broad brush if, in fact, Judge O'Toole is doing it that way, and I suspect he's not. But, for example, Catholic teaching and one's adherence to Catholic teaching would be not only a permissible but an essential aspect of the jury questioning process here. Ordinarily, it would not. Ordinarily, my religious views are mine and not the business of a court or any lawyer. But here, not because you're a Catholic qua Catholic, but exploring your moral views on the death penalty is not only legitimate but essential in picking a jury in a capital case. Now, you're right. I mean, Boston is a heavily Catholic community. Boston is also situated in a state that abolished the death penalty 31 years ago. Now, the Tsarnaev case is in federal court, and we have a federal death penalty, irrespective of what state law may be in Wisconsin or Massachusetts or Texas or anywhere else. So the death penalty is on the table in that federal trial, and both sides in the court will have to explore very carefully whether, all right, you're Catholic, and you may subscribe wholly to the teachings of your church, but do you understand that civil rules govern this proceeding, and are you willing to follow the law in considering whether to apply the death penalty or not?
We're talking to attorney Dean Strang about the challenges of selecting a jury, especially in high-profile cases like the Boston Marathon bombing and the Aurora, Colorado theater shooting. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, maybe your experiences. What do you want to see from jurors in these high-profile cases? Have you been on a jury or been knocked off the list for some reason? What was that like? And attorneys and judges, call in and share your thoughts on jury selection. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@wpr.org. We continue our conversation with Wisconsin attorney Dean Strang. We're talking about the challenges of picking a jury in high-profile cases. There are two big ones going on right now. Courts are trying to find jurors in the Boston Marathon bombing trial and the trial of the accused Aurora, Colorado theater shooter. Four digits of people being considered for these juries over time. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about how all this works, how juries are selected, how people are removed from the pool, or have you experienced it firsthand as a potential juror, an attorney, a judge, or a defendant? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. Dean, turning mainly to the case in Colorado now, it's likely, it seems, that a not guilty by reason of insanity may be the main issue here. Is that something that goes into the jury selection process?
Sure. As I understand the Aurora case, there's no real question about whether James Holmes killed these 12 people. A theater full of people watched him do it. He did plead not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect, insanity, please, so to speak. And so jurors will have to be screened by both sides on whether they're willing to consider such a defense and whether they understand that the success of such a defense probably will leave him in a locked mental facility for the rest of his life anyway, not, you know, out on a sidewalk near you. So that's absolutely something that the judge and both sides will be screening in that case.
And is it the case that if somebody expresses skepticism over that plea in general, that they might be removed from the jury pool?
They might, depending on the strength of that skepticism or their willingness to abide the instructions that the judge will give on what the law is, regardless of what their opinions about it may be.
Let's go to a caller now at 800-642-1234. We have Sandy on the line in Port Washington. Sandy, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Sandra?
Pardon?
Go ahead.
Okay. I was on a jury. It took 3 months. It was in California. And we had, like, 3 men on trial. And they tried them all at once. Sometimes all the jury was in at the same time, sometimes not. Now, it was interesting in the selection how people would really emphasize how they're against the death penalty and all that. And I just kind of lay back and thought, oh, I'm not going to get selected. But I did. And I tell you, it was very, very educational. What was interesting is just how hostile some jurors are. I felt like I was picked on a bit, to be honest with you.
Well, Sandy, thanks a lot for the call. I want to bring Dean in on this. A couple of interesting points there. First of all, she mentioned that she was on this jury for 3 months. You were telling me before we got started that this case in Colorado, they're saying it was going to go till the fall, October or something like that. How does that duration play into jury selection?
Well, it makes me wonder whether the criminal justice system ought to be pleading insanity, to be honest with you. In the Colorado case, they're talking about jury selection going 5 months or more, just jury selection. And then keeping those jurors who are selected until October. That's an unreasonably long process, and it seriously distorts the type of juror, the person you're going to be able to get. I mean, who among us has nothing to do on his or her calendar between now and October? So, you know, you get people in these very, very long, arduous trials who, you know, are really not a cross-section of the community as a whole. And either they want terribly to serve for some reason, or they're simply not facile enough, if we're going to be honest about this, to say something that they know will get them excused from service.
Sandy, thanks a lot for that call. And I think the interpersonal dynamics of a jury might be a subject for another show sometimes. Joe is with us now in Oconomowoc. Joe, hi.
Yeah, hi. I'm up for jury selection sometime in the near future. And I'm curious about how the more low-key jury trial selections go. Like, what are the first few questions that are asked by the judge and attorneys to weed the obvious ones out right away?
And Joe, before we let you go and have Dean answer, are you hoping to get on the jury or hoping to weasel out of it?
I'm really excited to be on the jury. I'm very interested.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Dean, what are some of the first things that is, so if I'm in a jury pool, and I get up to the front there, what are the first things I hear?
Well, first, Joe, let me be a good lawyer here and tell you, you're going to be under oath when you're on that jury panel. And whatever you do, tell the truth. That's the first and main thing. But what you'll hear initially from the judge are the sorts of just mundane things that I have described here. Do you have a vacation scheduled? Is it a particularly busy time at work? Do you have a sick spouse or parent for whom you're the only caregiver? In other words, things going to the question of whether you really can focus on the case, concentrate on the case, and be there every day through it. After that, not the judge so much, but the lawyers in a state court case will get into your attitudes about the issues, whatever they may be, that the trial, whether it's civil or criminal, may raise and require people to think about.
Thanks a lot for the call. Good luck going through the process. As we wrap up, Joe was saying he hopes to do this educational experience. That's what we heard from our other caller. This is going back to the Greeks. This is an important part of civic life. Briefly, your thoughts on that, Dean.
It remains an important part of civic life. I mean, in this country, at least, we entrust justice in the end to people who are outsiders to the justice system. And for my money, that's the saving grace, is that the insiders don't, in the end, get to decide a case that people have decided to try.
Dean, thanks so much for joining us today. That's Dean Strang. He's a shareholder in Strang Bradley LLC, a criminal defense law firm. He's the author of Worse Than the Devil, Anarchists, Clarence Darrow, and Justice in a Time of Terror.